Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Hey, Murderitas. I'm Danica.
And I'm Shannon.
We are the mother-daughter hosts of Murder and Mimosas,
a true crime podcast that strives to focus on lesser-known cases.
We personally think these episodes go down a little bit better with a mimosa.
You sip, we share.
So grab yours and get ready, because every Saturday at brunch time is a new episode.
You can listen to us on any podcast platform.
Excited we can still record.
Yes. Yeah, we're back on a different day, in between what my segment and trying to do yours. I knocked my mic off my desk and broke the cable, and spent two and a half hours today going between four different places trying to find one that would fit.
Right, and we don't get paid overtime.
No. And it's, I guess my mic is set up stupid, how, yeah, just how it has to plug in. Most of the ones that fit are like USB-C that would plug in are too big. So it needs a little
for
it won't fit.
Special shaped hole.
Yeah.
They're all unique, as I was joking to you. All the holes are different. Oh my god. No, that's a nightmare.
Yeah, it was brutal.
They should make things should just more universally fit. It shouldn't be like you need an iPhone charger, you have an Android charger, you have this or that. Like when but there's a few that we have in our house that fit, because I just said to you, oh, my one that charges my earbuds case, it also fits my phone. And I was like, that was a like life changer. I'm like, oh, I'll just keep this one cord at work then, and then I got cords at home, and then I can charge anywhere I am, you know. And then like Pat's got some cords that were from his like Xbox, but they fit our phones too. And it's like, well, that's the way things should be. Shouldn't just be like, no, you have to buy this special thing because it's from this special company, because we all want our special companies to make money.
Yeah.
Like, it's so stupid.
Well, theoretically, my Bob Marley over-ear headphone charger should have worked, and then the charger for my phone also should have worked, but they didn't because the outside part was too big. It wouldn't fit in properly. Because that's all USB-C. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's the ones I was trying when I was like, oh, hold on, I think I have a couple, and that's the ones I was trying, and I was like, nope.
I was like, okay, I was like, still talking for a minute, because, you know, it's like when you drop a call or something, you don't know, you're still talking, and then it's like, oh, wait, the person's not on the line, or whatever, and I was like, oh, she's trying to, like, fix something, I think. Something's happening there. And I was like, oh, okay. Oops, something's going on.
Yeah, it was picking up the inside of, apparently, I now know what a USB-C looks like if you break it off of your charging cord and then were to like take it on all the little layers. I know exactly what it looks like. Now a computer engineer. No.
Yeah. It's like a bomb. You're like, cut the red cord.
Well, I was like picking up, I was like, well, this is the little metal outside, and I guess these are the layers that actually physically plug into whatever it needs to, and this part looks like a little comb, and I was like, oh my god.
Right, yeah, because you don't want the cat to eat them either.
No. Yeah, definitely did not want that again.
Oh god. But which I don't, they did try to make cats into recording devices or spies.
That made me so sad. I don't like that.
No, it's concerning. Yeah. Like, it's interesting to hear about, but then you're like, okay, hopefully they didn't try that too much because that was like invasive cat surgery.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, yes, we are recording on a different day, as sometimes it might happen to people. Because we had some issues, but I think we're still going to be able to get this out because it's not the end of May yet.
We've got, yeah, we're good.
Like 5 days, I'll get it on there. It only needs to be lightly edited. And yeah, I was just telling Pat that you told me about the Falcon Lake incident, which is really fun. And
yeah,
I'd love to get through big UFO cases and stuff like that, you know, which we don't always talk about it, but we could. We love it. This one is from Africa. So I've actually done a case, like a UFO case, you know, on that continent once before.
Yeah.
Might see a familiar name come up in the case even. I did. but this is the story of Elizabeth Clarer and her alien lover. Mr. Lover Lover. You're Shaggy. I'd heard this originally, I think, on it, and that's why we drink. And then I just had this vague recollection of, like, wasn't there, like, a lady who was in love with an alien? And there was maybe, it sounded, you know, it sounds like a soap opera. Yeah, oh, something. I think of
Nigerian prince, an alien.
A National Enquirer story, yeah.
Yeah.
But I remember it being really intriguing, so... No, I took a drink because you needed your charger. I just listened to Night Classy, and one of their fans literally made a drinking game for them, and she was reading out the points, and the other host was laughing so much. Well,
maybe like...
What?
I'm literally holding back his feet because they're like trying to hit buttons on the laptop. And he's trying to kick.
Well, that would
feet.
Be part of, like, our drinking hey. Game. It would be like anytime hey. Kelsey has to deal with Gordo. I see your butt, Gordo. I saw your butt and your tail.
Oh my God. Fuck off, Gordo. He's trying to attack me. Don't. You will get picked up by the back of your fucking neck.
Mm-hmm. Why does he have such an attitude? Fenrir does that sometimes.
Because he wants attention. He thinks doing it, getting it by attacking you is the way to go. Are you going to be killed?
Oh, now you look all sweet.
No, he's not. Nope.
Oh, what a dingus.
No, he does that. He will, like, latch on to whatever he can because he wants attention. Yeah.
Okay, that's annoying.
Yeah, but it's something that they normally grow out of and stuff. Oh, yeah. He doesn't seem to.
Yeah, Fenrir acts like a big puppy sometimes, but I can't think of any, like, quite as destructive ones of wanting to just lash out. It's like, oh, that's annoying.
Yeah, he does it intentionally. Like, attack with, like, intent to hurt you because he wants you to pay attention to him. And it's like, no. Like, you don't do that by latching on and then, like, biting and, like, as hard as you can and then trying to, like, rip open your arm.
Oh my God. Like, no, yeah, I think of Fenrir where he's more like, he's trying to play with you and then his big nails scrape down the insides of my legs and, like, leave bruises and stuff. And I'm like, I know you're just trying to play, but, like, even when I friggin', you know, keep your nails clipped, you're still hurting me. But yeah, Yeah. Sometimes he actually has gone like snappy, as if he's trying to eat something and I try to take it away from him. And then I've had him almost snap me and I'm like, no, you fucking don't, dickhead.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's annoying. All right. So, ready for this. Elizabeth Clare was born in South Africa on the 1st of July, 1910. So,
oh, wow. A little
bit older.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I'm gonna burp. She was born at a place called, I think they called it, or pronounced it, Mooi River. It's spelled M-O-O-I, River. In a place apparently called Natal, which did make me kind of laugh, because natal unit yeah. is where babies are. And I'm like,
yeah,
that's weird. Maybe that is the pronunciation. I'm not quite sure. Because I'm a dick and I didn't look it up. I did look up Mooi River and I was like, oh, it's pronounced like basically how it's spelled. And then immediately forgot. But I don't know. Like I said, it's like Mooi. It's M-O-O-I. Okay, now that makes me think of the one in Stephen King where he's like, M-O-O-N, that spells moon. Did you see that one? I think it was No, it's not The Dark Tower. They tried to make that one into a movie, but it's the one they just remade into a miniseries with Alexander Skarsgård as the bad guy. I can't remember the name of it right now. That's okay.
I don't know.
It was pretty good, though. The original had Rob Lowe, and he was the one that did... He was the simple character that said, M-O-O-N, that spells moon. Anyway... Pat kind of got me into it because it's like it wasn't a Stephen King one that I really knew, but it's good. Yeah. So her father was a veterinary surgeon who bought a farm and became a successful shorthorn farmer, is what it said. I'm not sure if that's like a shorthorn cow or, you know. What animal?
Probably different animals. I don't know.
Yeah, it was like a quote that called him a shorthorn farmer, and I didn't expand on that one, I'll be honest. But also fun fact, he was a dedicated polo player.
Okay.
Yeah, I always kind of forget which one polo is, but I think it's one of those horseback weird games that rich people play or something.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there's water polo and then there's probably regular polo.
Yeah. I always think of water polo because I went to school with a couple people and kind of like in, I think, elementary school to like kind of early middle school that did water polo. Yeah.
Oh, really?
But, yeah.
I know. It's like, I've heard of it.
Yeah,
but don't really know what it's about. And they lived at this farm that he bought, and it was called Connington Farm, near a place called Rosetta, which I was like, ooh, also a pretty name. And it was there that she and her sister had their first close encounter. So they were outside feeding the pack of I just love some of these details. Sealyham puppies. Didn't actually look up what those were, but
yeah, I don't know.
It was like they were playing with some puppies. Okay. And like multiple sources said it, so I was like, cool. Maybe they're sheepdogs, I don't know.
Yeah, but... I don't know dog breeds.
No, I know, I should have looked at it, but they looked up to see a silver disc bathed in a pearly light. And it proceeded to swoop over them. And at the same time, a giant orange, red, and cratered planetoid was observed orbiting and rotating high in the atmosphere. The disc rushed to meet it, pacing and guiding it northwards, while the planetoid left a smoke trail in its wake. So it was weird. This, yeah, exciting. That I think like multiple people saw it. But that was the first ones the girls remembered. And then another sighting might have occurred shortly after that, this time with their Zulu mythology teacher, I think.
Oh, that's cute.
I know, I think they had a cool teacher. Life. Yeah. Like, it sounds like he's teaching them some cultural things. Yeah. Stories of the land. But the early sightings aren't the most famous. Then she's going to have more sightings as her life goes on. So Elizabeth went to St. Anne's. How do you say that? Diocesan College? I think so. Diocese. I think it's a Catholic thing.
Probably, yeah. There was, I think, a lot of Catholic going on everywhere and just trying to take over everything all the time.
Well, that, and then some of these names, like the place that she took it in, sounds very like, I want to say Dutch. I think that it was the Dutch that had Africa for a while, because some of their names sound like that. So it's called Pieter Maritzburg. So it sounds a little European to me. But from there, she did move to Florence, Italy, like as a young woman, to study art and music. And then she went on to a 4-year diploma in meteorology at Girton College in Cambridge. Come to think of it, I think that's Cambridge, the UK.
Yeah, but then probably.
I was like, it could also be Massachusetts. I don't know. She actually learned how to fly a small plane called a tiger moth, which I thought was kind of cute.
Nice. That's a good name.
Yeah. I love it in the early days of flight. And then like these women that you learn about that learn to fly or whatever. You're like, oh, cool. It was like, you like before the Night Witches story, there was a bunch of like Russian ladies who were just like, we're just learning how to fly for fun because it's this new craze. Yeah. So during one of her flights in 1937, flying from Durban Baragwanath in a leopard moth aircraft, all these cool moth names, she saw another UFO. It seemed to like approach and then coast alongside her aircraft and then sped away from them. So that was probably like her second sighting, really. She also went on to fly in the RAF during World War II. So that's the Royal Air Force. I don't know why everybody fought in the Royal Air Force, but probably because they were still maybe under British rule. I don't know. History, y'all. And then by 1954, her sister was living on this little farm in South Africa called White Leaf. And by the way, white is spelled like White Avenue is here. W-H-Y-T-E.
Nice.
I know. It's kind of weird. She told Elizabeth that the native Zulu people were reporting a lot of lightning birds appearing in the sky around there. So, lightning birds, eh? Elizabeth said. So she and her children moved from Johannesburg to this farm that her sister was living at. And she went up to this hill the very next day after they arrived, apparently, which was December 27th. And then she saw a spaceship descend and then hovered about 3 meters above the ground while emitting a soft humming noise.
Creepy. And
yeah. I love that, like, she moved there. She's like, what? You guys saw some UFOs? I'm there.
In the neck, there the first day.
Yeah. She's like, I'm on it. From what she could remember, it's hull, I guess. So maybe the outer.
Yeah.
You know, spinner or ring or whatever. Its hull was spinning, but its central dome was stationary. So everything said that she could see a figure inside of it from, like, she could see into the window or whatever.
Oh, creepy.
Yeah. And she could see three portholes and noticed a barrier of heat that came off the ship. And I guess she saw, yeah, she saw a figure inside of it, but I don't think she could see him very well, but she could get the general idea of like a tall, human looking, light haired figure, we'll say.
Oh, okay. They have hair. I don't think I've ever heard of aliens hair before.
Oh my God. Yeah. There's like drawings that people have made of the possible likeness, but there's no there's no pictures of this alien, but there's probably a few pictures I could have put on the drive, so I apologize. I probably should have, but you know me. I was like, I should have put pictures. But actually, yeah, one of the pictures reminded me of the one I think I might have put on the drive for the Lemurians when we talked about Mount Shasta on here. Like a blonde, you know, just Viking-looking guy or whatever.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I think it was just like a, you know, it's an artist's rendering. It's not like a real picture or anything. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. 18 months later, after she went up the hill the first time, she went up the hill again. And this was on April 7th of 1956. And this time was the time she got taken aboard the ship. This craft was like 60 feet or 18 meters in diameter. So pretty big once you got up close to it, I guess.
That's huge.
Yeah. You're like, okay, this is bigger than a car.
Yeah.
But I think it was really a small ship from what she describes, you know, as to their main traveling ships or the mother ships. On board this ship, she did see a second figure who was shorter, stockier, and a little bit darker skinned than the one she thinks that she saw through the windows before. Now I'm picturing like George Costanza or someone who's like the shorter best friend type, you know. I'm like, okay. And this guy was apparently the spacecraft's resident botanist and astrophysicist, if we had to put it into our terms, I think.
Okay. I was gonna say,
yeah. He's very smart. And then she was taken to the central area where a big, clear, like, lens or window lay in the floor, kind of like a glass-bottomed boat is.
Nice. That's cool.
I know. It's so cool. And she was just able to look down through it to the earth below and just, they're like, yeah, this is where we can see out and we can see all the earth from here. It's really handy, which is just so crazy. And then this little ship took them to this larger mothership, and when she got there, or this one's I think is more cigar shaped, but commonly the thread was when she got in there, it was like this huge landscaped kind of garden like interior. She always described it as being like this big garden, which I thought was pretty cool.
Oh, okay. That'd be weird.
No. Hydroponic plants? Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
We figured it out. Or the aliens did. She's just in complete awe and delighted by everything she sees. Especially this tall, strapping male alien that is called Akon. This is the one she first glimpsed with the lighter hair, I guess.
Oh, okay.
The one whose name I couldn't remember, and then I was like, I was trying to Google it, and then his name almost sounds like a rapper. I think there might be like
a... There is an Akon.
Is there an Akon?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's what it is then.
He had like a couple of hits a number of years ago, and he's actually donated, and is it power or water he supplies to like thousands of people in Africa, like from what? His money and everything. Yeah, it's either water, he's like revolutionized the water in like all these communities, or like power.
Really?
It's like crazy. Yeah,
with like his
money and his royalty
earnings.
No, he is not a rapper. He was like a some like fucking terrible like pop song. I can't even remember. There's like a few of them early 2000s.
It sounds very familiar, yeah. But I couldn't call to mind what song he would have sung. I was just like,
I can't remember.
Well, I thought maybe it sounded familiar because I'd heard about this alien story before. I don't know. We'll have to see if he's a good singer. Maybe he's the pop star. So this is where it starts to heat up. She's now met Akon face to face, and they are hot and heavy. They like each other, and in between their stolen kisses, he's telling her how not only do the aliens of his race take sometimes human lovers to strengthen their offspring's blood and bloodline.
All right.
Yep. I mean, she's horny. She's hardly caring what he says. No. but he says that she is actually a reincarnated Venusian alien from Venus. Not sure how we say it. Respectfully. But not only is she a reincarnated Venusian, she's his long-lost soulmate also.
Of course she is.
Drop that bomb.
It's like any terrible romance book.
It does sound like a bad pickup line. But I love it so much. It sounds like a terrible pickup line, but it's also one of those stories like Bob Lazar or someone, or Travis Walton, who's like, this fucking happened to me. I don't know what you want me to say about it. Like, she just doesn't change her story. She's like, it just happened. Okay. Like, what do you want from me? And you're always like, oh. It's something that's going to be hard to talk about if you had an alien abduction. Like, people are going to think you're crazy. Like, it's just not.
Yeah.
It's not ideal. But yeah, he gives her lots more information, which I found really interesting. He said that some of the, I'm just going to say Venusians. I didn't know how I was going to pronounce that. But they've settled and are living among us. So later that very month that they had met, on April 30th, 1956, a handful of people noted a steady red glow that was poised at a rocky section of the hill that stayed until 2 a.m. So a lot of people did report something in the sky around this time.
Oh, okay.
Which was in the 50s, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, like double stigma talking about this crap. Like, this was so not long ago. It's like happened around the time my mom was born. I don't want to say it was so long ago, but like, they barely had TV.
Yeah, it was ancient. They're writing on stone tablets. And
well, no, but we're hardly
that,
past
I
the
said whole that to my dad world. Once, and he was like, rah.
What?
I made some joke about my dad having to do his homework on stone tablets, and he got really mad.
Yeah, just the way we all love hearing about how old we're getting. But mm-hmm. Yeah. Or just we were just watching an early Simpsons episode just before this, and then it's like it shows Lisa in the future. So it probably came out in the 90s or whatever, right? And then in the future she dates this British guy, and then they're like, oh, I think he says something like 2010, and then I'm like, oh my god, that was the future for them. And then like like some things are like, oh, here's a fake, it's like a hologram tree. But then other things you're like, oh, they just were using something that like basically looked like a tablet, but it kind of also looked like an old calculator. So you're like, they were kind of close.
Yeah.
Our technology is pretty fucking crazy compared to the 90s. Like in the 30 years, we made some crazy leaps and bounds for sure. But it's that whole thing of the people will be like, oh, the Simpsons predicted the future because they'll do things like Trump gets elected, or like this, sometimes they'll joke about things happening before it actually happens. Yeah. Anyway, so they did sell their farm in July of 1956, and then Elizabeth made another visit to the hill and managed to take pictures of the UFO with the family camera at that time. So apparently was darting about for about an hour that day. So she was watching it. And she got a picture, and that one can be looked up. I'll put it on our social media and stuff, but.
Okay. Is it a good picture? Yeah. Can you see anything?
Well, it was from the 50s. It is good. I can see the shiny metal object in the sky, but see, people from the day were like, it's so fake, and they all said that she must have faked it using a hubcap.
A hubcap?
Yeah.
Now I have to look this up.
I'm sorry, I should have put a picture, but...
All I can look up is Akon. Is it this song?
Yeah, you could do Akon UFO picture. That would probably bring it up. Or if not, then
I think I'm
Elizabeth's name, Elizabeth Clare. I'm sorry, because there is still seemingly a picture available, but I wouldn't say it's anything obviously more believable than today's more crisp photos. But I also don't think that it's a picture of someone throwing a hubcap up into the air. You know? It was just like a 1950s camera, I think.
I'd say for the size that it appears versus the cloud that it's in front of, it'd have to be pretty fucking big hubcap for you to be able to see it from the ground like that.
Right.
Like
just assuming that, yeah.
The proportions of it.
Yeah, like, things that are in the distance are farther away. And
yeah, like I think about like when you're on the ground, you're like see a plane flying, and like how big is a fucking plane and how small does it look in the sky?
True.
Like it looks pretty comparable to like a plane you'd see in front of a cloud like that. So that means it's gotta be fucking huge.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
I'm very bad at sometimes that kind of stuff. I'm like, wait, I need scale. But you know, you're right. Like that, the scale would just be off. Like,
yeah.
It looks big next to the clouds in the picture that I remember too. It's very, very interesting. Now we're getting to the interesting part. So flash forward to April of 1958. This is the year that it really comes down to Pound Town. So April is the month for this couple. They finally consummate their feelings, Elizabeth and Akon, with apparently a whole day of lovemaking, where he takes her to the high plateau of Cathkin Peak. And if I looked it up after Cathkin Peak came up, because it was like a mountain around there.
Okay. I was like, where?
Well, at first I was like, there's a Cathkin Estates. But then later on, they were talking about mountains again. And I was like, oh, okay. This Cathkin Peak is like it's mountain. A mountain.
Okay. You mean they didn't do it on that still, like the clear dome that you can see?
Oh, yeah, like the glass bottom boat feature. On the ship. Doing it on that. Hell yeah. And then it was broadcast for all the other aliens to watch.
Like people doing it in front of a window. You're doing it on the bottom of a spaceship. The glass bottom of a spaceship.
That's kind of hot. I kind of like it. It sounds like they had a great relationship. I don't know. I think she loved him, even though he couldn't be her human partner here on Earth. But he gifted her with this silver ring, which enhanced their telepathic connection so they could just speak to each other, like, mind to mind, which, like, all right.
Nice.
Before text messaging, like, hello.
Yeah.
Communication problems, not us. No. Said no human ever. Maybe this is why I thought there was love letters, because there was a quote she said about their joining. Ew, I'm so gross. But she said, I surrendered in ecstasy to the magic of his lovemaking, our bodies merging in magnetic union as the divine essence of our spirits became one.
That's a bit too much.
To become one. Spice Girls. Yeah, she was into it. I think I skipped over part of the last bullet before that, though. Because they had the telepathic ring that they could speak with. And then also, upon this, you know, consummation session, she actually conceived a child, and that was at the tender age of 48. So she was a little bit on the older side to be conceiving a child.
Yeah, that's fair.
Especially at that point in time. Like, you do hear about it, I think, a little bit more nowadays, but...
It'd be extremely high risk then, I think.
Oh, yeah. It was like they could freeze her eggs or do whatever the heck they can to make it more viable. So his plan wasn't the only thing he laid out. Wink, wink. He said that she could just pass the majority of her pregnancy, I guess, on Earth. Like, that was fine. You know, get checked out by your doctors or whatever. But then that he would come get her to come give birth on his home planet, which is actually called Meton. Meton? Meton? Meton. So I just never decided what to call it, apparently. Meton. And then I put birth tourism, yo, because, like, people will be, like, kind of pregs, and then they'll go to another country so that
baby,
by the time they have the baby. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's that, so then the baby, if the baby's born somewhere else, then they'll have that citizenship kind of thing.
Really? So,
yeah. But, like, you can't travel much in your third trimester, so, like, you have to be really invested. You'd have to go to the place you want to have the citizenship at, like, at least 3 months in advance, that you could have the baby there. I heard about it when I was working in travel. I've never
heard of that before.
I hadn't until then, and then it was like, oh, weird, this girl wants to travel here, and she's from, like, Mexico or something, like, but she's pregnant. And it's just, we were like, huh? But then I learned that, like, you know, can be a thing if you want to make sure your kid gets dual citizenship of two countries.
That doesn't seem fair to me. Like, it makes sense if you're living somewhere, like, actually living somewhere, and you have a child and it's born there because your parents are living there, but not because you're on fucking vacation should your kid have citizenship somewhere else.
Yeah.
Like, that's bullshit. You're like, well,
right. Or, like, oh, we have some family here, so we'll go and have the baby here just so we can have dual citizenship in both of the countries or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. It does seem like you're a little bit taking advantage of the system.
Yeah, that seems shitty. You should at least have to have, like, visas or be living there for a certain amount of time, like the parents are, for your kid to be able to claim citizenship.
I like that too. Yeah.
Yeah. I think so. Weird.
Yeah. But his home planet is very interesting. So this Meton, or whatever we're calling it, was apparently orbiting around a star called Proxima Centauri and the nearby multiple star system Alpha Centauri.
Okay, I'm like, I've heard that.
Does it sound familiar? Okay.
Yeah, you talk about Alpha Centauri in Good Omens. It's where they say they're gonna run away from when the Earth blows up. He's like, I hear it's good this time of year.
No way.
Yeah.
Okay, because I've heard like the Pleiades talked about in sometimes just anything as innocuous as the Red Hot Chili Peppers song, but that's, I don't think I'd heard about this one much before. And also, I really, really am meaning to watch that. Also, other things that you've recommended, like fucking Killing Eve and ones with it, I'm like, they're on my list.
Yeah.
I'll watch it even if Pat doesn't want to watch it. Also, speaking of, is it Killing Eve? Yeah.
Yeah.
With Villanelle. That's the one. I looked, there was a Reddit thread earlier about villains people would have sex with in a heartbeat, and
oh yeah,
on there.
People,
I saved
her.
The post because there was some funny stuff that I thought we could talk about in our Reddit Patreon thing tomorrow.
Oh, you don't even know. She's very blatantly in love with Sandra. Like, oh, his character Eve.
I bet, like, the tension is just like thick.
Oh yeah.
I don't even know Sandra Oh that well. I know she's in that one. I know she's in, like, Grey's Anatomy. I know she's a good Canadian actress, but I haven't seen her in that many things, personally.
I haven't either, no.
Yeah.
But she's so good in it. I like her.
Oh, it sounds really good.
She seems like a very down-to-earth, like, person, and her acting really comes across. It's, like, just...
Nice.
You can kind of relate to her because she has, like, bad hair sometimes, or like, this is grumpy, like, or kind of stuff like that, where it's like, it's just not your day and stuff.
You can relate to them because you see yourself in this
character.
You're like, they're not all perfect.
Right? Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to pee in a minute here. Okay, let me finish this page. Quote. Okay, so she went there to give birth eventually, and she had a son. So, quote, her son, Ailing, stayed behind on Maton, I'm sorry, I don't know what I'm going to call it, to be educated while Elizabeth reluctantly came home. Maton's planetary vibrations affected her heart, and she was consequently not permitted to return there, instead receiving follow-up visits from Akon and Ailing.
Oh. Yeah. That's sad.
Yeah, it was too hard on her heart. Literally. Which, I could see that. I mean, she's not compatible with it. She hasn't grown up there. Like, the atmosphere would be different. Yeah, I could see it. And apparently the whole trip, delivery, and return trip supposedly required less than 4 months. Sufficiently long to enable a 9-year stay on Meton, however. So,
okay, wow.
Yeah, that quote saying that, like, she was gone from Earth for 4 months, but was on the alien planet Meton, whatever, for 9 years. So the time was obviously a little different.
That's a long time to be on there, and then suddenly it's, like, not compatible with your body. I feel like you'd know that within moments.
Yeah.
Like, 9 years is a pretty long time to figure out, like...
9 alien years, but on Earth it was only 4 months.
Yeah, but so she maybe... experienced 9 years there while she was
there. Yeah, you would think her, like, body would experience 9 years of trauma or whatever.
Yeah. Or, like, being allergic to something take you 9 years to figure out you're allergic to the planet you're on.
It reminds me of Interstellar, which she wants to go, the Anne Hathaway character? Anne Hathaway, maybe? Yeah. Or she wants to go to the one planet because the researcher they might have left there, she was, like, in love with. But every minute they, like, spend on the planet is, like, freaking long at home that they're like, if we stop over at this place, like... my kid's gonna be a fucking geriatric. And by the time he gets back, his kid's a fucking senior or whatever the fuck.
Oh, yeah. I barely remember that movie.
I remember that part because they went there and the. Yeah, it just like the high stakes. Every minute they spent there was like so long, and then there was.
Yeah.
They were searching for the ship in the ocean.
Doggy. So I had to look up Akon. His
Did you?
Well, the singer Akon. I hadn't already seen the picture of Akon the alien, but this is... his hit song featuring Eminem was Smack That. Do you remember he's like in a prison? Yeah.
Oh, that was Akon. On the floor, that one?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was right. Okay. So he's trying to build a place called Akon City. He also started Project Akon Lighting Africa in 2014, which provides electricity to 15 countries of Africa. He launched his own charity. Yeah, a charity for underprivileged children in Africa called Confidence with a K Foundation.
Oh. Akonfidence. No.
Yeah.
Is he from Africa originally?
Yeah, it says he's Senegal. Senegal in the United States. Yeah.
Wow.
And then it also said he has four wives. And he practices polygamy. But
he really spreads the love around, not just with charities.
Yeah, but I'm trying to find more stuff. This was supposed to be Akon City. Tell me more about Akon City. Oh, the project has not begun construction.
Aww. Damn. Akon City. Yeah.
A suit has been brought against Akon by the United States for a debt of almost $4 million borrowed as part of his implementation of his futuristic city project.
Oh no.
Stefan said that
Akon City is giving Fyre Festival vibes.
And Akoin, or his cryptocurrency created, are part of a fraudulent scheme. No! Don't do it, Akon!
So he's a human being. He said he's tried to do some good things. And he's maybe possibly made some flawed choices.
But I do like, because I had heard, I was like, it's either power or like something. But yeah, to 15 countries of Africa. That's really good. I like that. I don't care how many wives he has.
Nothing can take that away from him if he helped with providing electricity.
Nice. Yeah, but every time you say Akon, this is who I'm picturing right now.
And then every picture of the Akon alien shows like this super... You're
like blonde hair, and I'm like, no.
Viking, almost Aryan, like, yeah, white blonde, blue eyes.
Every time you say Akon, that's not who's coming to mind.
The name sounded familiar to me too. Yeah. I remember telling
it's
you
even
when
spelled
I was trying
the
to...
same.
Yeah, because I remember trying to figure it out, and I was telling you like, I know I've heard about this one. Mm-hmm. And then like you were like, did you Google the name? And I was like, no, I couldn't remember the name. And then when I did, it was like,
this is an alien man. Bouncing around.
It's like Yeah, it's like they're an alien being like named like Snoop Dogg or Dr. Dre or something. So, I don't know. These are the rappers I know from when I was a teenager. And I used to steal my brother's rap CDs. Actually most of the aliens were humanoid, speaking of what they looked like. But at the same time, she said they were taller, better looking, more considerate, and gentler, not aggressive or violent. They were Canadian or Scandinavian. No.
I was just going to say they were European.
Right. I don't know. We're painting with a broad brush here.
Yeah.
Akon explained to Elizabeth how they had been forced to relocate from Venus to Maton when Venus became uninhabitable. Because Venus had been very similar to Earth at one time. It was full of, like, the lush greenery, a similar like atmosphere, but then it would befall like the scorching of the sun, from what I understand. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, and this is like a real thing. Because they're going to talk about sunspots. And like, I guess sunspots and sun flares are a pretty freaky thing that we should probably be worried about if we have room in our heads to be worried about anything.
Yeah, I just saw something that was saying, what, we would have approximately 13 minutes warning if there was a sun flare. What? And you would have to be basically underground. And like, that was it.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah, like, it'd be basically like atomic bomb level. Like, you'd have to be under a certain amount of dirt kind of thing. Because I'm sure, like, your house would just go up in flames. Because they're fucking wood and stuff. Mm. Like, if it's that worrisome. Yeah.
That's simultaneously. Wouldn't
want to be outside.
No. That simultaneously reminds me of a Darkcast Network podcast that's called, like, Cause of Death, 100 Seconds to Midnight. Talks about, like, you know how there's, like, that doomsday clock? Like, if we're 100 seconds to midnight, we're this close to, like, the apocalypse or whatever. And then, shit, that also reminded me of another one. Oh! Because on Well, That's Interesting, recently, they talked about a theory where this little kid had written in and asked someone, like, well, if Jupiter was, like, a planet that lived next door to you, like, what would happen? And they're like, I don't know, like, it's a gas giant. And then also, something you said made me think of it, because it was like, it would probably affect its neighbors a little bit. They'd be like,
yeah,
brought into its gaseous cycle. I don't know, really weird though. Okay, so yeah, they knew that's what had happened, or that's what Akon told Elizabeth had happened to them living on Venus. So they said the Venusian scientists recognized the sun was a viable star, or visible star, with maximum and minimum periods of sunspot cycles, which happens to this day, but at certain epochs in time, it expands. Now the sun is expanding and contracting all the time, she said. It is pulsating like a heart, but at certain epochs, I love it when they call it epochs, it's long time frames. It expands out even more in intensified radiation. Now, this is what happened to Venus, and being closer to the sun, its seas dried out, and what little fauna remained and all the flora were destroyed.
That sucks.
Yeah. And she said, continued on, and then, of course, the dinosaurs, which had dominated the Earth, were also destroyed through the intensified radiation. Which, I should finish this quote, but is a thing that could happen, I've heard, with sunspots. Like, you know, it would definitely fuck our planet up if we got too many close to us or whatever. And she said, thus, the great civilization from Venus was able to get away from Venus and landed on Earth and the Moon as way stations. I just love when there's fascinating details like this that just make it seem like, who comes up with this shit on their own, you know? Like, unless you're a screenwriter, like, I don't know. It is also similar in distance from the star, and also, more importantly, in higher vibratory rates. Vibratory. It didn't sound dirty until I said it out loud. But she said, more compatible to an advanced civilization and consciousness. So, yeah, Venus was similar, but also they were a little above us in their... I love the vibratory, the higher vibration thing, because that ties in with a lot of the, you know, new agey books that you read and stuff that I like.
Oh, okay.
Like the one, the Celestine Prophecy, like where once you got to the higher understanding level, then you were like at a higher vibration, and then you almost like popped out of existence and people couldn't see you anywhere, but you could see like...
Oh, that's weird.
the soul groups and yeah, all that stuff that like before they were reincarnated. Oh, I thought it was really cool. So she was told the Venus blah, 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 Venusian people left a section of their civilization here on Earth to look after the planet and advance the mentality. I'm sorry, I'm trying. Advance the mentality and consciousness of the indigenous people of the planet, which they are in the process of doing. That's us! We're the indigenous people of the planet!
We are.
So, yeah, apparently they've left some people behind here for us. This is interesting, to say the least. Yeah, I'm just trying to understand my own notes when I said, obviously they make telepathic rings in this society. Oh yeah, because he gave her that silver ring. That's right, because they could talk to each other.
Oh.
their wedding rings. It's like a utopia. There's no wars, no crimes of poverty, and all have equal access to food and energy. Sorry, this is continuing her quote. They have no need for a monetary system, and with unlimited renewable energy, there is no reason to fight over resources. They have these luxurious, silky kind of clothing, and they lived in what she called expansive parks, with no real, like, buildings.
Okay. So
there's another picture that I did see on one website that I'll have to put on our socials or something, because... Although it was like, it was kind of like if they had like an egg-shaped home. So it was like, okay, well, you have some buildings then, because you have like these houses. And then it was like,
yeah,
you know, it was like a schematic. Yeah, it was like bottom layer is like living room. And then like second layer was like some bedrooms and a bathroom. And then like third layer was like, I don't know, maybe some sort of a kitchen and... something using up the space good, like another garden or something. And I was just like, oh, okay, so they do have some. It's not like they don't have homes, but they said they didn't have like buildings, like skyscrapers and all that stuff, you know.
Okay, well, it probably doesn't sound like they have jobs or anything, but then she said they have jobs, so it was like the one guy was a botanist and shit like that. It's like, so
true. Yeah, like they have skills or positions, I guess you would say. Yeah. But yeah, they have no money because, from what I understand, they have no need for the money because everyone's given what they need.
So then I would be a freeloader and do shit all day long.
Okay, but what has always fascinated me about that Celestine Prophecy book I read was he was like, we're maybe trying to achieve this higher consciousness, someday we'll get to a place where we're all, instead of exchanging money for goods, like we might even just exchange money or monetary things for people that gave us good information. And I always thought, that just sounds like fucking insane, and like how could the world ever get to that? And I'm like, but we're slowly creeping our way there. Like if we're a podcast that will give people extra content and information if they sign up for our Patreon and things where they give us a little bit of money, then we're literally giving them information for money, and like it's not a monetary good. It's still a product, like, I guess.
Yeah. You're still selling them something.
Something, but at the same time it really resonated with me how he would be like, oh, ideally, maybe someday we'd be in a world where you would just trade for things, and if people had information you needed and they gave it to you at a certain time that you needed it, you would like reward them somehow. Like you would like pay them back with something. And I always thought that was really interesting. So that's why it's interesting to me when, we're kind of getting there in some ways where you're like, oh, I appreciate what you have to say, and like, I will pay you for your knowledge. I don't know. But yeah, this place is so crazy. Okay, so she said, It is similar in size to Earth, a little larger, covered with vast seas, and the lands are islands, not continents. The climate is beautiful, under control, and in fact is really a utopia. They have everything they want. They are not only thousands of years ahead technologically from us, but are also spiritually advanced. There are no politics, law, or monetary system. Medicine is a scientific activity and not required for health, since they are all in perfect health. They've figured it out.
Sounds nice.
I'll just say that. They must have figured it out, yeah.
So I want to know why they're trying to, like, have babies with us, like, with all the health conditions here. That doesn't really make sense. If they're all perfect.
Yeah, it kind of makes me think of, like the royals who try to keep themselves so pure that they ended up, like, inbred. It's like, maybe you have to introduce a little bit of variety, otherwise...
Maybe.
You're not gonna be... Your people are gonna be bred not to be able to deal with anything if you don't ever expose them to any, like...
Yeah.
Diseases or fucking... You keep the babies... I'm not saying go all Dwight where he's like, oh, a little bit of dirt never hurt anyone, and then he's like, cough on my drink! But, like...
Yeah.
At the same time, like, if someone dropped their pacifier on the ground and you rinse it off, like, the baby's not gonna die if they eat a little bit of dirt.
Right? You know? Oh my god. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that happy medium.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah, it's so interesting though. She went on to say, their way of thinking is quite different from what most people over here would understand. They are loving, gentle, and constructive people. Not like humans. No. Sorry, there's like just long quotes from her, which is really interesting, I find. So I just included a lot of them. Everyone industriously does their work, which they like doing most. There is no need for law. There is no crime or police. Everyone is free and has a code of ethics. They constantly create beauty around them, and in general, there is complete harmony. Their homes are lovely. You can see from the inside out, the material is transparent one way. They don't have schools or universities. Their education is completely visual, all done by what is called an electric mirage. Sorry.
So holograms?
It does sound like, exactly, yeah.
Sounds like a hologram. Like,
electric boogaloo? Or like
a projector.
Yes! You're
breaking out the overhead projector on us right now? Like,
I had to ask what that was called the other day when we were watching something, and I was like, what are they using? And Pat's like a slide projector? I was like, yeah! I don't know, we don't have those anymore.
Right? Yeah.
Like in, what is it? Not Insidious. The one with Ethan Hawke. No, Sinister, I think.
I think so,
the one with Ethan Hawke, and he finds the home videos, and they're all on the sliding projector, and it's all these so families old. That are like dead. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's creepy. I like that one. Oh yeah, it's called Electric Mirage. They have a little vial about 3 inches long, and they insert it into a niche in their home or the wall of a spaceship. Do they like just download information, I assume? But
weird.
I assume she didn't have the word download in her vocabulary in the 1950s, so she called it a little vial, and maybe it's like a little
USB.
A little disc, a little... What the fuck do we call this? Memory card? I don't know. So a 3D scene then fills the room. An advanced form of a holograph. Oh, okay. She did say the word. There are no books. They travel... Oh, that makes me cringe a little, but I assume they have digital versions of books.
Yeah.
Because that makes me go, no books! But, you know, e-readers is maybe
doesn't
what they're talking
sound
about.
Like they read for fun, so... What would be the point? They don't have any true crime thrillers over there.
Oh my god. Do you think because then they can just download information that nobody just like writes books anymore? Because that would make me so sad. I just had to take a drink. I don't like
that. Well, if they have no crime, they have nothing like that. Like, what would be their inspiration
they could talk about. I know. You're right. You're right. You have to have some conflict to have a book. You're right.
Yeah. Like inspiration. If your world is perfect, what the fuck are you going to write about?
Oh, fuck. I don't know. It's like that episode of Modern Family where she's like, Haley's like, Mom, I have to write about something that was hard in my life, but nothing bad's ever happened to me. And then her mom like drives her out in the middle of nowhere and like leaves her. I would never do that. Oh, so this is cool. But yes, I'll just go back a bit. A 3D scene fills the room, an advanced form of a holograph. There are no books. They travel a great deal. The young children are taken around the galaxy so they can learn from experience. They can use the electric mirage to go back to a former time in their history. They could, for instance, view our planet at the time of the dinosaurs.
Be nice.
Jurassic Park!
Yeah.
It has beautiful paintings and creates lovely music, harmonic music, and very uplifting spiritually, which relate to the harmonic music of the galaxy. They communicate by means of telepathy, and educational concepts can get transferred this way. They are capable of thinking in terms of the basic concepts, not dependent on language. They perceive the feelingness behind words. There is no problem in the learning of languages such as any of those on Earth. Well, let me tell you, Google did not like the word feelingness.
I was just going to say,
it did not translate that into any language on Earth. It was like, that's not a word. And I was like, leave it. Yeah. It's a quote.
Right? Yeah. It has feelings about the word of feelingness.
It does. Oh, so interesting though. Okay, that's the end of her, that one descriptive quote. So, but of course it was not perfect for poor Elizabeth, as it caused her those darn heart issues. If she stayed any longer, they believed she would have been in danger of dying, and she couldn't have like kept living on their planet. Even though they had, you know, such advanced
perfect medicine,
medical crap, they're like, you, it was, they said that it was too intense. It was like, I guess, I don't know, what if you went to another planet and like the gravity was hard, like that would eventually take its toll on you.
Yeah,
I suppose. At least she got to spend 9 alien years there. So, yeah, for fear of her life, they were like, yeah, we better put you back to Earth. And where she came back to Earth, she did her best to spread their message that the Venusians impressed upon her, their ideals of peace, love, and environmental understanding. And her ultimate goal was to help raise our awareness in order to raise our vibration level even higher, so that we can actually see them and deal with them. I love that. I love that part.
Be nice. And then,
I know. It's like, maybe we're just like not quite there yet. Because you do hear a few different stories like that. Like there's one person that said, I don't know if that was the one about the Canadian former Minister of Defense or whatever. Because we had one of those guys that was like, yeah, I talked to those guys, and we're just not allowed in the Galactic Federation because we're just too mean. They want us to just stop nuking each other, and then maybe they'll talk to us and things like that. And you're like, oh, okay, well, fair enough. Of course, they'd bring a Canadian to the table to talk about it. They know we're notoriously peaceful. But anyway. Yeah, so she was featured as a guest of honor at the 11th International Congress of UFO Research Groups. That went on longer than I thought it would. International Congress of UFO Research Groups of Wiesbaden in 1975. And there she received a standing ovation. I don't know. I was like, was that a place I wrote down? I don't know where this is. This could possibly still be in South Africa, but I'm not sure. Question mark. She wrote a book. which obviously I want to
read. They always do. Everybody writes a fucking book.
I tried looking it up on the library website, and I can't appear to order it, so darn it, I'd probably have to buy it, but
yeah,
it's clearly not a very big, well-published book, but it sounds interesting. It's called Beyond the Light Barrier, and talks about shit she learned from Akon, I guess. So, it could be interesting, like, just in more detail, you know? And her second book that was supposed to give even more detail about, like, the alien society and whatnot, she wasn't able to publish. She died before completing it, of breast cancer in February 1994. I think I had later where it was, what it was supposed to be called, but after her siblings had passed, she had moved back from Natal, I don't know, to Johannesburg, where she then worked at a bookstore. So she moved back from the little farm, I guess, back to the city, and was active in the UFO researcher community up until her later years, and apparently kept up a pretty good correspondence with an Edith Nicholson from like the 1950s to the 1970s, and they shared 23 letters in total. So I don't know if that's why maybe I thought I remembered her writing love letters to the alien.
She wrote letters to Edith.
Yeah, and then she has that one quote where she's like almost describing their encounter like a romance novel. So I was like, oh, I thought I remembered them joking about her like love letters, but it's been a while since I listened to a podcast about this or anything. Okay, this did seem familiar though, because the name was that she was interviewed by Cynthia Hind for a Fate magazine. And to me, I was like, Cynthia Hind, that sounds like the one that talked to the Ariel School UFO incident kids, because that was in Africa also. And it was the same one. Yeah, it was a interviewer for like a UFO magazine, and she had interviewed the Ariel School kids. Yeah, I was like, I thought that name sounded familiar, and then I was proud of myself for recognizing the name. Because like, you know how often you do notes and then you don't remember anything, you're like,
yeah,
right? And yeah, she made friends with another ufologist, a Kitty Smith. That makes me laugh, actually. Kitty Smith, Kitty Foreman from That 70s Show. Kurtwood Smith is the guy who played Red. Anyway, ufologist Kitty Smith contacted her after reading about her in this Outspan magazine, and they became friends. So that was kind of cool. And also read that Elizabeth just, you know, was still a little bit skeptical. Just because she had had an alien baby with someone didn't mean she was going to believe every story she heard about aliens. So she was like highly skeptical of this other South African lady named Anne Crueler. Because she believed her account was not believable in Elizabeth's eyes at all. And she said the same for a dude that was named Philip. It said his name was Philip Human. I forgot about that until I read it. And then I was like, oh God, right. Philip Human.
That's a last name.
I know. I'm like, is this real? I hope so. Because that's what I read.
Wow.
But he claimed to have had contact with extraterrestrials through like a trance medium. So, you know, obviously some sort of session where they tried to connect in a trance like state. And she's like, no, I don't buy that, because they wouldn't bother to communicate to you in that kind of primitive fashion. Like, she's like, I know these, you know what I mean? I know how these guys work. So that was interesting, especially because they had been friends prior to his claims that he had talked to aliens in a trance, And then it caused a rift in their friendship because she was like, yeah, I don't think so, bro.
That's my thing. Fuck out of here.
I think she was just like, I know you're lying. Ugh, but you know me. I like to believe everybody, especially if their story sounds really cool. But she was super dedicated. Every year, Elizabeth would return to the Flying Saucer Hill, as it was dubbed. Because she had to, like I said, stay here on Earth, although I don't know if I mentioned, but they would come back to visit her. Maybe I talk about later. Like, her son, so she wasn't, like, completely not allowed to see Akon and Ailing. Every year on the anniversary of their very first meeting of her and Akon, which was on April 7th, 1958, she would go up to the hill. So after she became too frail to ride the on horseback up to the summit of the hill, she got by with a little help from her friends. These friends were a group of SAAF. Hi, buddy. There's Fenrir. So I know RAF because that's Royal Air Force, but this I think was the South African Air Force helicopter pilots. They had sought shelter on her farm from a storm 1 year. And because she had provided that for them, then when she was elderly and she needed help getting up to the top of the hill, they would just fly her up there in the little helicopter so she could get up to the hill every year to meet. Or like, I don't know if he would come every year. That's what she said. But she would go up every year to meet Akon or whatever, or at least commemorate their meeting every year, which I just, that is very sweet, I thought. So actually Elizabeth had several human husbands, so she was married.
I was gonna say
several
times. What's going on with her, like, children on Earth? Because you said she had children, and I'm like, where the fuck are these husbands? And
I guess I did allude to some children on Earth. Yes, correct. Okay, so the first one lived with dad. He alien son went with dad Akon because she wouldn't have left if she didn't have the heart problems, but whatever, he stayed there. And then, well, she got married several other times to a few men. That sounds bad. I don't know. That sounds terrible. She got married. Okay, it said her third husband was an Aubrey Fielding, and she actually had his ashes spread over the crest of the hill where she met Akon, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah, that's so weird.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he wanted that. But
that was her
third husband, so she was married at least three times on Earth. Because then I looked it up. I was like, are they counting Akon as, like, her first husband? But even Wikipedia said she was married to a man named William Stafford Phillips, which was in 1932. So, and then
before
Paul
she met
Claire.
Akon.
What? Before, exactly. I know, I was like, yeah. And then Paul Claire in 1946, which I want to say is, that one's just before Akon. And then finally Aubrey Fielding in 1963. And she had three card-carrying human children. Well,
last
she had three
human
children. I'm like, let me read my stupid sentences. Had three kids, Marilyn Phillips, born in 1933, a David Clearer, born in 1949, and then Ailing, whatever Akon's last name is, I guess, born in 1959. Akon Alien.
Akon Alien.
Yeah, and then I put, it's too bad her second book was never published because it was supposed to fill in the gaps with the details that she wasn't able to put in the first one.
Quote, besides elucidating the military and political aspects of UFO research and explaining Akon's electrogravity propulsion technology, that seems like it would have been good to know. They're always trying to recreate it.
Like, yeah. Alien.
And before Elizabeth died, she had been telling and reassuring her friends and family that her son was doing well. Her son is in Ailing, Akon's son. She said, Ailing, like Akon, was now an astrophysicist who was crisscrossing the universe with his father, his space woman, Clea, and their son. So she knows she's doing well. And they are also astrophysicists. Like you brought up. Yeah, there's still some...
They still have jobs, which is
bullshit. They still have some titles.
I'm on a utopian society where nobody has to have a job.
It's like, but they don't have money. So they must have the job as something to do because they enjoy it. Like, we would still do this podcast if we won the lottery because we still enjoy it, you know?
But, like, you still receive money for it. Like patron or views, subscribers, like anything, ads, like you still would get monetary money for it. Like,
yeah, it is. It's very hard for me to picture a society that doesn't have a monetary system.
Well, even the ones, their monetary system is the trading of information and somebody else paying you back for the equivalent of information. You're just doing it without something symbolizing
money.
Like, you still have some sort of trade and barter system.
It is. Maybe. It's one of those things that's, like, sounds good. And I remember I had, you know, another, like, hippie friend or whatever that we'd, you know, get stoned and he'd be all, oh, we could go back to the barter system. And it's like,
it doesn't work.
Sounds good in theory, but, like, it's kind of like communism where, like, yeah, you have to make sure it still work and stuff like that. You're like, you'd think it would work, but then maybe people would want payment for something even if they had all their needs fulfilled. Yeah. Like, you don't know, because we've never really had that kind of society.
And you're still,
and communism has never worked in practice usually.
Yeah, like you're still having to assign some sort of value. It's just different symbols you're choosing on. You're saying, like, that's this button symbolizes this, and this will symbolize this, and this is going to be the equivalent of this many of this. It's just a different item
you're
assigning a similar type value to. Like,
yeah, because how would you determine value if there was,
or like, if you trade me one cow, you get 16 chickens. Like, it's always, you always have to have an equivalent type system. It just doesn't
How many fucking cows am I worth? I need to know what, like, is my dowry.
Even if it's not money, it's always something. Like, you can't get away from
that's
it.
That's true. Yeah, you're right. Everything always has a value.
It's
so confusing. So Ailing, her son, is out there hanging out with his dad. They have joint custody when he's in the galaxy. And Elizabeth went out of her way, apparently, to help her friend Kitty get a glimpse of a UFO, which I just love this, I have to say. According to thecitizen.com, it was Kitty Smith's sister who first saw a UFO, like, in their family, I meant, and then told Kitty about it. The date of the sighting was April 7th at 7:30 p.m. A group of their six friends saw it, and the sister said, "The sky was very black, with the stars standing out brightly. My brother, Tom Reed, saw the light first. When I looked up, I saw the light moving very fast. Having seen many an aircraft and satellites, they said it did not resemble one of those in the slightest." Doris Scott, Kitty's sister, went on to say, "I've never seen a UFO before. It would slow down tremendously, then zoomed off again in a straight line." I like that. "As soon as I saw it, I wished Kitty was here. When I told her, she had reminded me that our sighting was on the same date Akon had visited Elizabeth. I would so love Kitty to be proven right. She has done so many years of research. Speaking to the witness about her sister's sighting yesterday, Kitty Smith recalled the flyby in January 1984 that she believes Akon did for her benefit at Champagne Castle. You want to know what Champagne Castle is? It's a mountain. I know, doesn't it sound like a beautiful castle? I eventually looked it up because I was like, is this a fucking castle? Okay, but, you know, I love a mountain, so it still sounds pretty. It's a mountain in the central Drakensberg range and is the second highest peak in South Africa. It contains a series of subsidiary peaks, amongst them Cathkin Peak, which we've heard of, Stirkhorn, Monk's Cowl, and Dragon's Back, which I just like the name of.
It's some weird names.
A little bit. Monk's Cowl. Okay, so it's like, whatever. Maybe it's just those, like, the shapes of it. So Kitty had been instructed to go there by Elizabeth, who'd met Akon there before. So, Champagne Castle was a mountain. That's the pertinent information. It was not an actual castle, but she was told to go there, and then you could probably see Akon if you went up to the top of the peak. She saw blue, silvery, pulsing light first appearing behind a lit-up cloud. It just came across the sky, hardly moving, she recalled, then stopped above a swimming pool. Quote, Clara told Smith she had spoken to Akon about doing a fly past. She told me that I had done research all my life but had never had a personal sighting. She said Akon said I deserved one and they had arranged it. I asked her why and said I was not important enough for him to travel 4.2 light years to do this for me. I like to think they are together now. End quote. So that's where I ended it. I was like, she tried to do things even for her friends that just wanted to see a UFO. Can you imagine your friend has an in with an alien?
Yeah, that's weird.
You're like, I would like to see one someday. And she just like, yeah, it was like, you've done research your whole life. You deserve to see one. And then just like arranged a fucking sighting. Wow. I'm like,
that's weird. Yeah.
That's insane. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's why I love that story. It's just really interesting. Yeah. That's my whole crazy story.
It's a lot. I don't even know what to say.
It is. And when I was trying to find the story, when I couldn't remember the names and stuff, I remember I was telling you that I was having to Google things like people who've had sex with aliens and just a lot of stuff was coming up. But, like, there was at least a YouTube video, excuse me, of, like, 10 people who had, like, 10 different stories of apparently having sex with extraterrestrials or having at least some sort of weird contact that I was like, what the fuck? How is there so many stories on this? Like, I was like, oh my god, is this, like, a mini-series we should have? Like, what is going on? Oh god,
I don't think I could handle that.
And here I thought I had alien love letters, but
no.
This one was really fun. I still had a lot of fun. I don't know.
Yeah.
You did a really good one too. Oh my gosh. I love those ones that just have really good evidence or, you know, really weird pictures or really unique circumstance that you don't see from a lot of other cases, like his friggin' scars or whatever. You're just like, huh? Yeah,
crazy. I think it's all the details and everything.
Yeah.
We said, like, people not changing their story.
Exactly.
About what they saw or experienced.
And most people agree. Why lie about something like having a UFO encounter where most people are just going to look down at you, make fun of you? It's embarrassing. You know, it's not, like, something most people want to admit to. Yeah. So take a lot of flack for it, they do.
Yeah.
Damn. I wish I had my own encounter.
someday. I don't. I would ever sleep again.
I mean, and when you think about the craziness, like, the guy in your case, I feel like had permanent complications and stuff like
that. Yeah, he was sick all the time.
Right. Like, well, being human sucks enough. No, you're right. I'm good.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of podcasters like that, where some are like, okay, but I kind of want to be abducted, but I kind of don't want to be probed. I'm kind of on the fence. You know, they're just like...
Yeah, no.
They're like, not really sure. It's like, I want to know, but I don't want to know. And I feel like I'm exactly the same. I'm like, oh, it'd be cool to have a paranormal experience or a, you know, sci-fi experience. But at the same time, it'd probably be terrifying.
Yeah, well, it's happening. No. No, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for listening.
Yeah,
I hope you enjoyed that one. I thought it was kind of a fun one. So,
I'm sure everybody did, yeah.
There's your alien spank bank for the month.
God.
I don't think we picked our next bonus episode, but we've been talking about doing some fun stuff, so... Oh, yeah, we're going to definitely record some, maybe like a video or two tomorrow with some Reddit drama or some shit. So that should be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have some
different stuff figured out to do.
Oh, for sure. And then, of course, we'll have whatever our bonus for June happens to be. So stay tuned to the Patreon for the rest of it. And we love you.
Of course. Bye.
Till next time.
Hello, my name is DJ, and I'm the host of the Mythical True Crime Podcast. Join me and the Darkcast Network of indie podcast creators as we delve into the mysterious and the macabre, exploring captivating tales of true crime, legends, and unsolved mysteries from the realms of mythology and reality. Uncover the dark true tales of modern legends with our spoken narratives that blend history, crime, and the supernatural. Just starting season 3, you can listen to the newest episodes every other week, as well as all my backlog episodes, on anywhere you can listen to your podcasts.
Well, all our longtime listeners will definitely know that, recording a podcast is not always easy.
Nope.
So you better believe, like, when we find something we like, that we're going to probably stick to it and not look for anything else. So yeah, that's one of the reasons why I love Zencastr. When we tried it, we were like, okay, finally, I wanted to have the video, and it's what, up to 4K video, which is pretty effing cool. I can see every pore on Kelsey. No, I'm just kidding.
I hope not.
But it's great video and, like, just really easy on this one. So, like, once we stopped recording on our phones, I was like, yeah, this is the one for us. So even though sometimes our computers fuck up, it always comes through for us in the end, because we've never lost, like, a recording, knock on wood, and every time we've had to use it, it's just been really great and really easy, and everything's just recorded when we wanted it to, which is, you know, it's a lot to ask for when you podcast as much as we do.
Yeah, it's nice that each of us has our own separate audio recording that you can download and edit. So it makes when one of us doing something or has something, it's easy. You can edit that out even with the other person was talking, because you have two separate tracks that you can edit. Yeah, it's one of the reasons we love Zencastr. It makes it a lot easier. And the audio quality is also a lot better than any of the other programs we tried using in the past.
Yes, it is the best. So Go to zencaster.com/pricing and use my code cryptic and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencaster paid plan.
We want you to have the same easy experience as we do for all our podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story.
Keep it cryptic. Thank you for listening to Castles and Cryptids. We love all our listeners and appreciate every subscriber, every new review, every listen, rate, and download. Our music is by Kobe Off Air, and our cover art is by Antonio Garcia. We are also a proud member of Darkcast Network, where you can find the best and spookiest of all indie podcasts. Follow us on social media, where we are at Castles and Cryptids on mostly all of the things, now including TikTok. Check out our bonus content on Patreon, Cryptid Clashes, video minisodes of your hosts making asses of themselves, Ask Me Anything, quizzes, other special episodes, and more. Starting at just $2 a month, you can get 1 to 2 extra episodes, depending on your level. We produce, edit, and research everything ourselves, and any support you can lend helps us to keep it cryptic.